Well, welcome to Radio Fishing and Radio PGI Fishing Club. Just another exciting day on the world, in the wide world of water and sports and, I mean, just everything else. And this is Fishing Frank in the chair, and I got Vinny in the chair across from me, and we got John and Ron, and this is beginning to sound like an early morning talk show. All right, let's see. This is about Fish of the Month, PGI Fishing Club's Fish of the Month, and Spanish mackerel, and we're going to be going over ways of catching them, how to catch them, all for the coveted prize on the PGI Fishing Club. Anyway, let's see. Quite Frank. All right. Good morning, Vinny.
Morning, Frank.
All right. Can you, make sure you point that. So
yep.
There we go. That's good.
All right.
And good morning, John.
Good morning, Frank.
Okay. And Ron, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, fellas.
Okay. Well, we're, these guys are from the PGF Fishing Club. And you guys got, 600 members?
Close to 600 now.
Yeah, and you do have to live in Punta Gorda Isles to be a member of this club. Now, there are other clubs around the area, Englewood Fishing Club, Burnt Star Anglers, and the Burnt Store, and there's, of course, our own Fish and Franks group. But this is about the PGI Fishing Club. So, you guys, Fishing a Month is coming up. Let's hear about it.
All right. Well, I'll open it up and then hand it over to the pros, but... you know, like you said, every month we have a different fish of the month. This month is Spanish mackerel. You know, just my initial assessment of it is going to be a challenge with the cold water that we have.
I've heard about some mackerel out right along the beaches and a little bit out in front of Turtle Bay.
Have
so you got a shot at it. And the water's warming up, you know, quarter degree, half a degree, almost a day now with this bright sunshine.
Yeah.
I mean, we're getting a lot of really nice sunshine. So it's like Florida again.
Yep. So, you know, just to kind of kick off my part of this, you know, we're doing this with Frank to help our club members to be able to, you know, get a jump start on catching some Spanish mackerel in March. You know, historically, you know, at least my knowledge of going after the mackerel, you know, wait for that water temp to get up a little bit. You know, I kind of like 72 degrees, which we're a few degrees from that right now. And historically, it's always been when you start seeing the bait fish coming into the harbor, you're going to have the predators following behind.
Yeah, Spanish mackerel, they come in just before the sharks come in.
Yep.
So you're hitting it on the head with that 72 degrees. That's exactly where I would look for the mackerel. And like you say, we're getting close. John, what's your opinion of Spanish mackerel? What do you think?
Well... if I beg your pardon, I would like to say a few words on another subject before I get into the Spanish
now,
mackerel.
None of our listeners are used to me changing topics.
Well,
that would be completely unheard of for us.
And nobody that knows me, or anybody that knows me, knows that I like to stir the pot.
All right.
And let me stir the pot here just a little bit. When Vinny invited me to do this, I says, well... there's something I got to bring up before we get into the Spanish mackerel, and I wrote down a couple of little notes here. And what I'm speaking to is a shrimping in Charlotte Harbor. I can't understand why we let this go on when this is a beautiful estuary. And to me, an estuary is a place where fish are hatched out and they grow up, and just a beautiful place where marine life can grow and produce. And when you take the shrimp out of the estuary, you're taking their food out of the estuary. When you take the food out of the place where the fish are growing up, they're going to move on to new locations. So I just don't understand it.
Well, I think what the thing is, a couple months ago, I wrote an article in a magazine. And the article was factual. It was correct. And the problem is we have a local shrimper here who thinks I'm after his job. And I really don't care because whether they do it or they don't do it, you know, one local boat is not going to change the world. And especially if what he says is true and he's catching 50 pounds of shrimp a night, that's going to be hard to even pay for gas. But it's the big thing about it is he wrote a article saying that I don't know what I'm talking about. I agree with him. Okay. Yeah. He's God. I'm an idiot. Yeah. Okay. But like, I care. I know what I write is correct. And, you know, you can argue one person's opinion over another person's. But the fact of the matter is, there is no national estuary where you can allow commercial dragging of nets. And Tampa Bay did it correctly. Tampa Bay banned the commercial shrimping and grandfathered in the people who were making a living there. And if you're making a living doing something, I don't have any problem with you making a living. My big beef, and my beef to this day, is how many of the offshore big boats. And FWC has nobody to measure the nets. The last guy who knew how to measure a net retired or got transferred or something, but he's not here anymore. So when it gets rough in the Gulf, they come into the harbor, they drag these nets up and down, and they could be dragging the exact same net as they do in the Gulf, which is huge. It's a lot of death and destruction. Average, by everybody's estimate, 15 pounds of marine life has to die to get 1 pound of shrimp on the table. And that's a lot. And that's where my stand against it is. I just don't think we should allow commercial shrimping up in the harbor.
Well, Frank, I've lived here for 15 years. And 10 or 15 years ago, you used to see quite a few shrimp boats out there. It seems like it's died down to about a couple, but I understand there was more came in back a couple months ago. I don't know about this, but one shrimp boat is one too many out there.
I'm not sure I'm on the same page with you as that, because if a guy was making a living at it, and he's a local guy, and he's been doing it, I think he should be grandfathered in. I've always thought that way. When the net ban came in, I said, you know, commercial fishermen who live in a county should be able to work their county and the adjacent counties, period. Or pick three out of the state that you want to work. But this whole idea of when the shrimping's really good here, people come in and harvest what's here. And the biggest problem with the harvesting is not that they're killing the shrimp, which is horrific enough, but when the shrimp migrate, they don't live in the harbor. They live in the Gulf of Mexico. Shrimp like to live in 60 feet of water or more. But that's the base food for the mangrove snappers, the hogfish, the grouper. Every fish out there relies on a base of shrimp. Texas came along and found out their fish weren't growing. The offshore fishing off Texas was getting really, really bad. Texas enacted a law that you're not allowed to shrimp for bait or commercial or anything until after the shrimp were measured. They go out sampled by the state, and when the state deems that they were big enough to have spawned once and have a new generation going, then you were allowed to go shrimping. Florida has no such regulations, and that's where the problem comes in. If your state is shut down, you can just come to Florida and fish anytime you want.
Well, I think we just about agree on that, but I just think the iron ox ought to be put on a reef and make a nice reef out of it. Well, CCA, where are you? Okay, maybe we better get into the Spanish mackerel.
Let's get into the Spanish mackerel.
Okay.
I can honestly tell you that I appreciate your efforts, but somebody barking at me and telling me I'm wrong, boy, if I had a nickel for every time that happened, I wouldn't have to run this bait shop anymore.
Well, let me back up a little bit more. After that, this morning I read his article, and it looks like he just has been in business here and been dragging our harbor for 2 years. The Iron Ox was here before that. I don't see why he's doing it for his 50, 75 pounds of shrimp. I don't think that's paying his bill at the marina, much less his gas bill. So, Iron Ox, go fishing and quit shrimping. Now we get into Spanish mackerel.
There we go. Okay.
Size, 12 inches to the fork, maximum 15 inches. They live 5 to 8 years. They're a migratory fish. They like to be in 70 plus water, and I think we're approaching that right now. Coming across the bridge, I seen three or four bait pods out there.
Now, I just looked it up. In Naples, the water temp is in the Gulf of Mexico is 66.2. Key West is 72.1. and Pensacola 57, St. Petersburg 66. So we're usually about 3 degrees warmer than the Gulf. So figure we're between Naples 66. So we're up there 67, 69 degrees in the harbor. We're usually about 3 degrees warmer than the Gulf.
Yeah. There was one of our club members or two of our club members went out yesterday and caught cobia. So when cobia starts, Spanish mackerel, kingfish, they're all going to be rolling in here pretty quick. One thing you got to watch, though, your Spanish mackerel can be mixed up very easy with the juvenile kingfish.
And there's also cereal mackerel as well as king mackerel. We have three types of mackerel here.
That zero, I don't know anything about. I'll have to talk to the Oracle about that. Anyway, the way I tell the Spanish mackerel from the juvenile kingfish is the lateral line. The lateral line on a Spanish mackerel will be almost straight, where a kingfish it'll go down a ways and then it'll make an abrupt drop to the tail. The other way I tell is the Spanish kingfish, the dorsal fin is almost white or light colored, where the Spanish mackerel is black.
You know, I forgot about that. I forgot the different color dorsal fins. Spanish mackerel is the black one.
Yeah, that
much simpler explanation. When you're looking for them, if you get a king mackerel, it's a different color fin on the back than the Spanish mackerel.
But that lateral line is really the giveaway, because I have caught juveniles out there, and you see the yellow spots on them. You think, oh, I got a big Spanish. No, that lateral line drops. That's a kingfish. And to tell you the truth, the authorities' law, they don't like ignorance of the law, so you better make sure you got a Spanish and not a king. Equipment I use a pole about the same as you would for a redfish or a trout. I put have 20 pound braid, and on the end I'll use fluorocarbon 30 pounds to 40 pounds. Tie that about six foot long, and tie it directly. No swivel. You do not want a swivel, and you do not want leader.
Now, why wouldn't you want a swivel on?
Well, that Spanish mackerel, the one that hits your lure, he's got a lot of buddies with him, and he wants that lure too, and he'll nab that swivel and break you right off. It's not the Spanish mackerel you have on your line. It's his buddy that wants to get in on the action too, and he'll cut you right off.
What's amazing about fish, especially ones like Spanish mackerel, is the fish in the line is fighting the pull of your line. You know, you're trying to fight him in, he's trying to fight to stay out, and it's the same thing as a fish being really excited eating something great. And so that fish gets all excited, he gets all wound up, and the other fish go, wow, that looks like a lot of fun, let's go do that too. And they're trying to eat what he's eating. And so what you're saying is that swivel is almost a fish attractant again. Now, I use a lot of steel leaders, and one way to get around it is the new AFW knotable leader, because you can tie a uni to uni knot with your line to the leader, and instead of having a swivel there. Or if you got to use a swivel, I find if I use black swivels, avoid silver or any other color at all costs. Dark matte finishes are the best. Nothing shiny like a stainless swivel. I use the dark black matte swivels. I have less problem with it. But you're right, the swivel, big problem.
Jim, you don't use any wire at all, do you? You go fluorocarbon all the way to the lure?
Yeah, no wire. No wire. I just, you know, 30, 40-pound fluorocarbon. Them Spanish mackerel can see good. They got good eyesight. And, you know, you'll get cut off once in a while. But there again, a couple years ago, I caught a lot of Spanish mackerel, believe it or not, on a Sebille. And I usually use a spoon, but I had this old Sebille on, and I caught Spanish mackerel after Spanish mackerel for about 3 days, and never got cut off with the same leader and everything. I couldn't believe it myself. I kept waiting for to lose that OSA bill, and I never lost it. But normally, I use a spoon.
How about you, Ron? What's your Spanish mackerel secret?
Well, me, Frank, I'm the rookie of the bunch. I'm probably learning here more than I'm going to be able to add. But Spanish mackerel are aggressive. And when you see the bait jumping, that's probably because Spanish are pushing them to the top. And they're fairly easy to catch. I mean, you can catch them trolling. You can catch them casting. You can catch them with a spiel. You can catch them with a spoon. John's favorite spoons,
you're giving away a little too much here. You are in the corner there, so be careful. There's no way out at this point, you know. That chair's not the safe one when you're giving away a guy's secrets.
Yeah, but
a silver spoon would do.
Yeah, silver. But that sidewinder will get.
Vinny's already gave too many of them away.
I sold the last one today, by the way.
But I'd like to ask you, Frank, that wire leader. Is there a clear wire leader versus a black wire leader?
No, but there's no such thing as clear steel. It's still steel, but you can buy it different colors: coffee flavor, black, silver, red, and sometimes it's a detriment. Sometimes it helps. But normally, I'm putting a little bit of steel on in front of there, like John says, where they're going to try and bite you off. And sometimes I've had them hit the line when the fish is running and the V on the top of the water where the line's going through. I've had them hit that and cut me off up there. I've had them hit the knots. I've had them hit the leaders, the swivels. I mean, pretty much they go after everything. I'm going to say one of my favorite mackerel lures would be the old jerk jigger, what they call now a gotcha. Mm-hmm. And I've used that successfully for a long time, and I find I get broke off less with it. But I've also lost it on the second cast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but as a general rule, I find I do better with the mackerel. They seem to concentrate on that more than the leader and everything. I don't know why, but I guess I got to try a Sabeel. You know, advertisement, Sabeel will be at the tent sale, March 19th, Sabeel will be here.
We'll know one guy who'll buy them all.
Well, the one cool thing, I bought all the Australian ones, the ones you couldn't get in the U.S. I got special dispensation from the powers at Sabeel to bring in Sabeel lures that were sold only in Australia. So you're going to see some that have never been seen in the U.S. before. Some new ones and some old ones.
Well, but what about the hooks?
I have no idea. What about the hooks?
Well, on a Sabeel, I always change my hooks on them.
Yeah, I can't tell you what hooks are on them. I've not actually seen them. They're supposed to be here any day. But I did buy some that were only available in Australia. So you're going to see them for the very first time here.
Well, I don't recommend using a Sabeel on Spanish mackerel for the price of the Sabeels versus a spoon.
But we are talking about tent sale prices, though, too.
Oh, okay.
You know, that could have a huge influence on it. So. Well,
when I'm looking for the Spanish mackerel, I look for clear water, birds, baits, and I troll. When I get one,
I get it. Vinny,
excuse me, I'm sorry.
No, you just said something, but I'd like to expand on it a little bit. What about the birds? What's your opinion about birds? What are you looking for?
I want to see birds hitting the water, going after bait.
Now, is by hitting the water, you mean they go down, grab, and fly away?
Yeah.
No. Come on, you can do better than that, Vinny. I'm trying to help you here, buddy.
They dive down and dive down and dive down and
That's what we're looking for.
Oh,
thing that you want to look for is birds hanging out over the top of the water, hovering on the water. If a bird flies down and picks something up and flies off, I mean, that could have been a marshmallow somebody threw away.
Yeah.
You know, there's no telling what that thing was. It's when the birds stay over the top in one spot, looking down at the water, and don't seem to care about anything but what's going on the water. And usually at the surface of the water, you can see a bit of stuff. People get confused, and they think, well, there's birds sitting over there. And birds sitting on the water are
no good.
So let me clarify, Frank. I'm looking for a bird feeding frenzy on top of the water. How's that?
That's what we're looking
there
for.
You
know, because it does get confusing. I've had people ask me all the time. And you say, well, I'm looking for birds. And I don't know. I had this picture of people driving out there and following a flock of pelicans out towards the Gulf, you know. And that's not what we're looking for. We're looking especially for smaller birds like seagulls and terns hovering over the water very intently, going down and coming back up and going down, coming back up multiple times. That means fish are feeding.
And when you find that, you don't need to troll. You can just stay on them and cast and have fun and cast and bring it in and have fun.
Now, Ron, you're a newbie, so let's get your take on this. If you see the birds out there, right, and you're coming up to them, what do you do to get those fish? Drive up into under to the birds?
No, of course not. You're going to run the fish off, so you can't just plow right through those birds there. Yeah, get as close as you can and coast in on them.
I usually try and get upwind of them and shut the motor down and drift into them casting, trying at the same time while I'm drifting, trying to stay just outside of the school. Because if you run your boat over the school, they could sound down and just never come up again. So it's a really tricky play when you see those birds on what you do at the boat. If you run up there and pull your motor back to neutral, they're going away.
They're very, very fast swimmers. They're going in a flash, yes.
You know, it's been one of those things, and, you know, with the people in the club who are newbies, we kind of take for granted things like, I look for birds. But what are you looking for in the birds? That's always the question I get asked most often. So anyway, going back, let's go back to what you were saying a minute ago. You went out, you looked for birds, and what else?
Oh, I just went clear water and looked for birds. But when I don't see those, that's when I go where I think they might be. And there's a million places in the harbor that they might be. And just troll. And when I get hit, then I cast again. So I shut the motor off and cast. And I troll about four miles an hour, 4 knots.
Now, question I would have, is there any similarities in the spots where you go looking for them? You say there's a million places for them to be. Do they have anything in common, or is it kind of random spots?
You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's kind of random spots, because I've seen them in, you know, in the harbor and the big holes. I've seen them in 6 foot of water. I've seen them just off the bars. I just don't understand it, but you just got to troll, and when you hit one, you know. And sometimes I troll and I hit one and I don't get another one. I start trolling and hit another one and I troll, but I can't find them to cast to. But when you find them to cast to with all that flock of birds and everything, and they might be out at Boca Grande, or it could be on an Alligator Reef, it could be off Boquilla, it could be any place, but it's a blast when you bring them in and hook them.
Okay, now I
let them go.
I got one question for you guys. Do you eat Spanish mackerel, Ron?
Yeah, I mean it's good. It's a little bit darker meat than some of the white fleshy fish that we eat. It's good baked. It's good. There's several ways you can fix it. You can smoke it. You can broil it. You can fry it. But it's all about taking care of it out there when you get it. You can't just. You got to put it on ice.
Now, Vinny, what's your take? You eat Spanish mackerel?
Yeah, initially we didn't, but finally we figured out how to prepare it, and we actually like it. And like Ron was saying, you want to take care of it right away, because it's not going to live in your live well. It's going to be the dead fish in the live well real quick. So you want to get it on ice, and then when you do get it home and fillet it, get the dark meat out.
Now, how about you, John? Mackerel eater or not a mackerel eater?
No, I'm a fresh mackerel eater. I eat them the same day.
I am pointed by figuring what you go right. Absolutely correct answer. That's my thing.
We do not freeze them. Except, I was at a, matter of fact, it was at, whose house was? No, that was at your house.
Yeah.
He had a shindig, and one of the guys brought some smoked fish in, and he put it on a cracker, and he says, John, taste this and tell me what it is. And I tasted it. Mmm, boy, that's good. That's got to be smoked kingfish. He says you're close, but it was smoked Spanish mackerel.
Yeah.
And what they did, they brought it in and they cleaned it and smoked it right away, and then they was able to freeze it.
But that's different. It's been smoked.
It's been smoked right away, and then they can freeze it. But don't.
Absolutely 100% with you. If I know I'm going to have an early day and I have visitors and I want to show them one of the best meals in the world, and that's go out catching the Spanish mackerel, come back, keep them on ice right away, put them right in the cooler, get them on ice, come back, fillet them, wash them, clean them, put them on the grill. I use butter and lemon herb seasoning, brown on one side, turn it over, brown on the other side, done. And it's an amazing meal. If you try and do that the next day or freeze them and everything, they're just pretty nasty. But fresh that day.
Exactly what I do, too.
If I got two people, I keep, three people, I'm going to keep two Spanish mackerel. Because by the time you put the other stuff with it, it's not a fish to load up on. You know, figure everybody's going to get a couple fillets. I mean, although when I do go out to get them, I mean, we keep three or four fillets for each of us because they're really good. But we don't have much else with them. But if you're doing a lot of side dishes, figure, two fillets per person, which is one fish. So the legal limit's a lot higher. But what are you going to do with them if you don't eat them that night? They're just not going to be good for much.
That's what I don't understand. What do these commercial guys do to catch them?
They sell them, and that's why people don't historically like mackerel. If you get out of the country, they sell a lot of them overseas and other countries because people like that. I mean, but I don't eat fish head soup either. You know, everybody's got their own thing. Jack Crevelle are one of the biggest dollar fish down here, and mostly are exported because Jack Crevelle is considered a delicacy in many places. Frank, smaller they are, the more they're worth.
Frank, one thing that a lot of people don't know is that they're one of the richest sources in omega-3.
I'm hugely against buying omega-3 vitamins because most of it comes from the food that the whales eat, the krill off of Antarctica and stuff, and it's just not a good idea to buy fish oil in the store. Go out, catch a Spanish mackerel, clean it, eat it, and you get all the omega-3 you want, and no waste, no fuss, no muss, and save the whales.
Well,
I never thought I'd be saying that, but
I think like Vinny says, the temperature's getting right there and it ought to start popping any day. It might be popping today, I don't know, but it's time to start looking.
Now, Vinny, what's your favorite way to get mackerel?
Yeah, very similar to what John said. We'll normally start out by just trolling, and we've trolled everything from spoons to the old White Storm twitch. And caught mackerel on that, but we'll troll along. We'll be looking for the birds. We'll be looking for any bait busted on the surface.
I agree with you guys on the trolling, but I don't troll a lot of spoons anymore. Sorry about the phone. We're getting a fax from somebody. But I don't do a lot of spoons anymore because they twist up so much. If you're going to pull a spoon, I'm going to say between 2 and 3 miles an hour and put a good ball bearing swivel on. Sample if you got it. If not, even an AFW ball bearing swivel will reduce that line twist a lot. But if you reel, after you're pulling a spoon, you reel it in, and all of a sudden your line's getting to look like you just twisted up a rubber band and it's all crazy knots and stuff. Cut everything off of the line, including your swivel, lure, leader, anything. Put the bare line in the water, kind of straighten it out with your fingers, and do not open the bail. Release your drag back as much as possible, and then start the boat at a slow idle and feed the line out into the water. The water will grab it on all sides of the line at once, and it acts like if you rub your hand down the line to get the twist out.
Yeah, I'll do. If I'm using a spoon, I'll have a swivel. If I'm using like a
but
twitch,
it's got to be a ball bearing. If you without a ball bearing swivel, 1 ounce of swivel locks up every non-ball bearing swivel and most of the inexpensive ones.
Yeah.
Well, how are you tying a swivel spoon on?
I put a swivel at the end of my line, or if a lot of them, I use a ball bearing snap swivel, and I just put my leader right to the ball bearing snap swivel, and use the clip on the snap swivel to put my lure on, and I just have the lure right on the swivel itself.
What kind of knot are you using?
My uni knot to put my swivel on. If if you're really good and you want to use a leader like you do the 30, 40 pound fluorocarbon, the best one is the smallest ones like an Albright or FG knot, but even a simple uni to uni would do okay. Clip the ends as close as possible.
You know, Frank, I'd like to get everyone's opinion on this. You know, and when I'm trolling just about for anything, whether it be Kings or Spanish, I like to use monofilament on the reel, on the main line, and I steer away from braid, and mainly because, you know, at least what I understand is when you're trolling braid, it vibrates. And so I typically troll using monofilament, and then I got a fluorocarbon leader. I'm kind of curious, you know, from
now,
you
here's
know,
a question.
And I didn't mention this. This is the pinnacle of mackerel.
Have you anybody, you guys ever been out fishing in the wind and had a rod in the rod holder? And the line's tight because, you know, it's sitting in the rod holder ready to go, but it's rigged up, but you're not using it. So the line's pretty tight. And then the wind starts blowing. You ever heard it go? You hear that?
Yeah.
That's where the story is coming from about braided line in the water.
Huh? What'd you say?
So,
huh?
I got the same problem. I couldn't hear it if it was, you know, hitting me in the head. I'm deaf nowadays. But everybody, when they're in the rods, they're running with the boat, and they're hearing this noise, and then sitting still, anchored up, and the wind starts blowing a little bit, and you hear the braid vibrate in the air. Now, most things that vibrate in the air vibrate in the water because the current going by the line acts just like the wind blowing by. So whenever that line's tight, like in Boca Grande Pass, when they're tarpon fishing with weights or jigs, that line's stiff and tight going from the pole down to the jig. And the common accepted theory is that it would vibrate just like it does rigged on your rod in the wind and make a lot of noise, which would run the fish off. And
do you buy that?
Well, I've heard it in the wind. I've heard the braid make noise.
Yeah.
And direct observation science would tell you that if it affects it in the wind, it would affect it in the water.
So, you know, what I do because of that, I always troll using mono, very rarely with braid unless I didn't have the right rods on the boat. But I'll troll with mono. And then I'll... And another reason I use it is if I hook up a big mackerel and he hits it, I've got a little bit of stretch in that line to deal with the shock when it hits that thing.
You're absolutely right, because when you're trolling, you're going 3-4 miles an hour forward and a fish hits 5-6 miles an hour going the other way. When you're using monofilament, the fish hits, the line stretch, the rod bends, and the drag gives. So if you're going to use braided, which a lot of people have braided on, you have to figure in those threes: line stretch, rod bend, drag pulls. So you've got a third less. So you really have to set that drag as light as possible just to hold the lure in the water to avoid a popping situation where the braid could be popped. Because with no stretch, you hit that magic weight of that line and boom, and a big mackerel could easily do it. So you need to back your drags down till it's just barely holding that lure in the water, because there's no line stretch, so it's the rod bends and the drag gives. So you got to have your drag as loose as possible when you're trolling.
That's a good point. I don't have enough money to have a lot of poles with braid on one and mono on the other, so all mine are set up with braid. But I do loosen that drag up, way up. I don't care whether I'm trolling for kingfish or grouper or what I'm trolling for. That line, that drag is set very, very loose.
Well, it's got to be tight enough to hold the lure. But try and limit it to exactly what you need and not an ounce more.
Well,
and then you're going to have much better success with the braid.
How I do it, I start trolling. And I have my drag open where it's pulling, the lure is pulling drag, and then I just tighten it just a little bit more and a little bit more to quit pulling. And that's whether it's for any fish when I'm trolling.
Yeah, that's the same thing I do. So the reason I like lever drags and dual drag spinning reels, like the Fierce Live Liner, the Spinfisher Live Liner, or the Shimano Bait Runner, or the Finor's Bait Teaser. I mean, and Akuma's got the dual drags too. Those dual drag spinning reels are real nice for doing that with braid, because you can set the rear drag and then have the front drag, so when the fish takes off, all you have to do is turn the handle. If I have a regular spinning rod with one drag on it, just on the spool, You got to back it down. And the easiest thing to do if you're in that situation, when the fish hits, I pick the rod out of the holder with the line going, I put my fingers against the spool, set the hook, and let go immediately just to get a good hook set. And then you got to adjust the drag while you're fighting the fish. That's why the bait runners, live liners, bait teasers with two drags on the spinning reel are so much nicer, or lever drag where you just got it backed way down and then you slam it into gear and go.
I got to tell you a story about myself, how stupid a guy can be sometimes. Because when I go home and I wash my reels off, I always loosen the drag way up. So we're out fishing last week, and I'm using my tarpon spinning rod for amberjack.
Good choice.
So I throw it out there, and bang, I get hit. Well, zzz, I tighten the drag a little bit, zzz, tighten the drag a little bit, still going. I keep tightening the drag, and then pop. I did not check the drag before I started fishing, and then I tightened it too tight, and I lost a big fish, and I cried and cried and cried. You got to check your drags.
Yeah, yeah. There's no way around that. If you preset.
One thing that John gets away with, a 30-pound fluorocarbon. I'm lucky if I get away with 40-pound, because those guys got sharp teeth. And one thing you got to remember, when you get them on the boat and you're trying to get that hook out, they have sharp teeth.
Yeah, first rule of fishing in Florida is don't put your fingers anywhere you haven't inspected first.
Well, I asked Ron to take this hook out of his mouth. You
know? Just lip him, hold him, yeah. Put your thumb in his mouth and hold that mouth open for me for a minute.
Ron got his fingernails trimmed.
I told you I was the rookie here, Frank.
He does anything I tell him.
Sounds like there could be a bit of hazing in this club. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, I could be off.
Marginal amount.
But now, when I go out looking for mackerel, I'm looking for all the same things that you guys are. But sometimes I have to take random chance. And if I'm going to go trolling for mackerel, I'm usually going to pick a reason for fish to be there. I do the same thing with king mackerel, Spanish mackerel, all fish that I'm trolling for. And that is look for a reason for the fish to be there. So what I do is I study charts of the harbor. I look for deeper areas in the harbor that start and end in a certain spot, which would act like a trough the fish might want to travel on. I'll pick a place like, say, the Alligator Creek Reef and Marker 1, because those are two food sources. And I always equate it to the same thing as me going down the interstate. I know once I've traveled that interstate, I know the best truck stops, who's got the food, which one's got good price on gas, which one I can get in and out of. And I think fish do the same thing. Once they come through, they're going to say, well, there's food here, and then there's food over there. So if I troll by the Alligator Creek Reef and don't hit a mackerel, I don't know that I'd randomly troll off into the distance, but I might actually maybe troll towards Marker 1 and between two food sources. Or from the reef, I'd troll over towards the sandbar on the east side, cutting across that area, because the fish that would be coming up that east side hit Alligator Creek and that swirl, and they might end up going back out to the reef. I want to try and figure out why would a fish be here and then here, and maybe I can get him in the middle of that. So I'm always looking for that. If I get a marker here and a marker over there, I'll troll between those or around a bridge. Something, a reason to troll, rather than random open water. And now we have the three deep holes in the harbor, the 20-foot hole, the middle hole, and the Pirate Harbor hole. And trolling from one of those to the next is also a good idea. Again, bottom feature on that, which means you got to get a chart and study it a little bit. So look for your bottom features that might hold or have a reason to hold fish. And why would a hole hold fish? Well, if you got dead stuff that going along the bottom of the harbor or small bait that gets caught in the current, it's liable to end up in that hole. You know, it's a collection point for other things. And maybe it's not even big enough for, let's say, fish to eat, but it might be big enough for shrimp or small pinfish or bait fish to want to eat. And so they would collect there looking at that other stuff, which would bring other fish to them. So any type of point where you can find. But the more you study things, going from the marker 5 over to the Cape Hayes Reef, good option. Two feeding points. A marker is structure. You know, it's also a problem for me getting around because it's the only thing out there to hit. The only thing that makes Shoal Harbor dangerous to boat in is the markers. But those are just kind of random thoughts. If you've got a new member who really doesn't understand when we say, well, where would you go look for? Those are the kind of things I look for. Just trying to be helpful.
Yeah. Well, when you
they all looked at me like either I gave something away or I did something wrong. I'm not sure what now.
No, when you run into them, it's fun fishing. They're fun to fish on light gear.
So anyway, what's coming up in the next club meeting again?
Well, one thing is you're going to be speaking at our next club meeting.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So that you're so the,
no
you're
one's
going to
attend this one.
Yeah, well,
they're going to go. I've listened to this idiot before. I don't need to do it again.
Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, we get the night off. Don't
get
we
get the night off. You don't have to go to the club.
Frank will show up. Where's Vinny?
Yeah. We can go snook fishing that night.
Yeah, I've heard his stuff. So what else is going on at the club meetings?
Well, you know, really, this is nothing big at this upcoming club meeting. You know, we're going to give our awards out. You're going to be the guest speaker. Just a very standard meeting this month.
Yeah. So it should be interesting, I'm going to say, even in spite of what you said. But, you know, I'm speaking. So, you know, flip your coin. If you got something else to do, I get it.
One other thing, Frank. We've got... you got the tent sale coming up on the 19th.
Yes.
And we've got a lot of volunteers from the club that I know have submitted their names on a list here. So they're anxious to
And they're all being contacted. This week I'm building walls. We have all those pegboard walls to build.
Yeah.
Building and loading walls, and then we're going to have an absolute idea. The list of factories is final now at this point. We've had to turn a couple away, and we were able to replace one or two that couldn't make it, but it's going to be a big list. It's a huge, huge show this year. I'm a little worried. I don't know if I can actually... I've never pulled off anything this big, so we're going to see if my organizational skills are going to be up to the task, because this is a huge show. I mean...
I have every
Akuma,
expectation
Iowa.
That
I mean, it's
Friday evening, the 18th, the plan will come together.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know me well, right? I don't think I work well under pressure, but I think that last-minute stuff does suit my style. But we've got a great show.
I had a couple of guys I was fishing with, and he says, is that tent sale really worth going to that Frank puts on? And I says, boys, if you haven't been there, you don't know what you're missing. You really get great bargains there. It's really a great time. And you see a lot of people. The only thing, it does get a little crowded sometimes, so come early or stay late.
It's very crowded. Parking's a real problem. But the people you get to meet there is what I think is cool. I mean, Mike Rice, the president of Penn, Barry, the owner of Star Rods, Mark Nichols, the owner of DOA, Eric, the owner of Mirror Lures. We got Doug and Mary, who run Strike King. And if you're out there listening, Strike King wants to open up a more of a saltwater division. And Strike King's one of the largest lure companies in the U.S., and they're very cool. Doug and Mary are coming here specifically. They've got stuff they can sell. I mean, they've got saltwater lures now, as well as their amazing line of freshwater. But they're coming to ask what the people of Shoal Harbor like to fish with, to get ideas for a new line of lures. So when you attend the tent sale, stop by and see Doug and Mary at Strike King, and let them know what you like. And, you guys got this. Maybe think about doing something like that. They're really some of the nicest people I've ever met. And they're here to ask us what Strike King should do. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty cool thing.
Well, one of the nice things, along with all the items being on sale, is to be able to be heads up with the vendors yourself, too.
Yeah, everybody in the booth, there's factory from everywhere. Flambeau tackle boxes, Mustad hooks, Akuma, Daiwa, TFO, Edge, Marine Metals. The guys who own Marine Metals are coming. That's the people who make all the aerators and the buckets and all that stuff. And they're really nice guys, real nice people. I mean, you guys are going to meet some of the coolest people on the planet. I mean, I've met them, I've talked to them. And why would I invite jerks? You know what I mean? Why would I? I have invited the coolest, nicest people who run these factories. And you're going to meet some really cool ones.
Oh, yeah. I got an invite. And And let me tell you something. If you butter them up and tell them how good the product is, sometimes they say, well, here, take an extra one.
They're pretty cool. And they're the factories. They can do whatever they want. That's why we have those people here. I mean, there's about 12 to 15 factory reps on the property that day, 15 to 30 charter boat captains, I think 24 factory people, and then a group of volunteers, and of course our staff, which is 15 or 18 people, I forget. I know I do payroll, but I still, you know, as Vinny, if you don't remind me of what I'm doing, it's lost. Too many radiation treatments. So anyway, getting back to it, PGI Fishing Club, Fish of the Month, Spanish Mackerel. And any last thoughts about Spanish mackerel? Ron, what's your, give me a last, final, what's Spanish mackerel thing to hit you?
Well, don't fish the day I fish.
That was big, Ron. That was big.
That was good, Ron.
John,
what? Just go out and have fun, catch fish and have fun. That's what it's all about, having fun.
I'd say if I was going out today to go target Spanish mackerel, it might be a challenge because it might still be a little cool. But if I was going out, I'd probably go offshore and maybe work some of the inshore reefs, you know, Helens, Novak, work along the beaches, but try and work out along the beaches and out offshore.
Yeah, I think that's
where I'd start.
That's really good advice, because they are just starting to come in. I've had a few reports, like I said, in front of Turtle Bay, places like that. But that means they're kind of coming in and making a swoop and usually heading back out. Once we start hearing reports up at Alligator Creek Reef, they've actually moved in. So
yeah. I checked the passage real good right now. The passage, all around the pass.
But that water should be right by the middle of the month, the end of the month.
Oh, in March, the water definitely, it's gonna go up a couple degrees. It'll get just about perfect here sometime in March. Yeah.
Any
it takes
day.
A while for the water to warm up. It's not like air, but we're only a few degrees away from wow again. No, in December, it was kind of wow. I mean, December was amazing water, amazing everything. And then January, the El Nino rains and the cold weather and everything. But March is going to put us right back into wow. This is going to be a great month to go fishing.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is Fish and Frank, and this is the PGI Fishing Club edition of Radio Fishing. And you know, I appreciate you guys listening. We hope we gave you a couple of tips and pointers. Fish and Frank in the chair. We got Ron. We got John. We got Vinny. And thank you guys so much for being here. And we'll see you on the next Radio Fishing.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Frank.
Oh, appreciate that, guys. All right. We'll see you later, guys.